Good afternoon and welcome to the Longmont Museum. We're a center for culture in Northern Colorado where people of all ages explore history, experience art, and discover new ideas through dynamic programs, exhibitions, and events. My name is Justin Veach. I'm the manager of the museum's Stewart Auditorium and I curate public programs. So good to have you out on this fine Sunday. Last Sunday in October. November, that means Halloween, I think, is tomorrow, and then November is the day after that. I don't know how that happened. It's disturbing. Time is moving too fast. Slow down, time. Anyway, this afternoon's program is being co-presented with Longmont Public Media, and we're happy to have them live streaming via Facebook, longmontpublicmedia.org, and of course, Channel 8 and 880 here on local Comcast cable. I want to thank all the folks who make our programming possible, the Scientific and Cultural Facilities District, the Stewart Family Foundation, the Friends of the Longmont Museum, our many museum donors, and of course, our museum members. Any museum members with us? Thank you, members. We simply can't do all that we do without you. So thank you. This afternoon's program is part two of our Media Matters series. It's part two of a two-part series. And this afternoon is on the local scene, and it is moderated by none other than City Councilman Tim Waters. Tim, of course, is the former superintendent of schools for the Greeley Public School System. And he is a general man about town. You know this guy. You love this guy. Anyway, he's also the host of Backstory with Longmont Public Media. I want to let you know that we're going to end the program with some question and answers, and we have someone who's passing out cards and something to write with, so that we can collect those questions and then pass them up at the end. Anyway, without further ado, I'd like to welcome our panel to the stage, ladies and gentlemen. Tim Waters and panelists.
Good afternoon. That was a real good afternoon.
Thank you. Justin, now that mic's working. Let me just state right off the top how much I appreciate Justin, you and your crew and the museum for your willingness to host this series and all that it takes to get it started. I want to say to those in the audience, thank you for being here and giving up part of your Sunday afternoon. I'm going to say to our panelists how much I appreciate each of you, what you do day in and day out, and that you've been willing to give us more than an hour this afternoon. We'll see how long this goes, but they've been here for a while. And I'm mindful that I get a chance to do these interviews every once in a while. And every time I do it, and there's a panel like this, I'm mindful that I'll never have an opportunity to interview this group probably ever again with the wisdom and the experience you bring together. And for this audience, you'll never have a chance to listen to this group bring what they are bringing today in the conversation. So it's a really gift to the folks in this room today, and it's a gift to the community. And I'm going to get this show started as the backstory, but it's recorded, so over time, regardless of how many people are here today or watch the live stream, there'll be a number of people who will benefit from this over time. So thanks to you, and there's a camera right up here, so I'm going to say to anybody who's watching this, welcome to the backstory. I'm Tim Waters. As a volunteer for Longmont Public Media, I host The Backstory, which is my opportunity to bring together folks and do some storytelling. And sometimes it's about nonprofits or programs in town. In this case, it's a series about what's going on in our lives. And today, what does it look like and how do we move forward, specifically focusing on journalism, news, and accountability. So, with that, I think the audience already knows that we have 3x5 cards and pens if people have questions for panelists. I already have one. I won't ask it now, but we have somebody who is anxious to get a question in here, and we'll get to this question. before we finish. And I will say to the audience, if we don't get to every question, it'll be because we run up against a deadline. So we're kind of 60 to 75 minutes. And if we run over 60 minutes, not a big deal. But running over 75 minutes, Justin's going to turn off the lights, I think. And then we're going to have to find our way out in the dark. So I want to introduce John Vallenkamp, who is the editor of the Times Call, the Daily Camera, the Loveland
Reporter Herald.
Reporter Herald. He's for Prairie Media. Has
Prairie Mountain Media,
yeah, yes. Prairie Mountain Media has broad responsibilities. Biff Warren is the co-founder, publisher, and editor. He's also an attorney, but that's what he does for a living. What he does for fun is publish the left-hand Valley Courier. And we'll learn more about that. Macy May, who has been involved in media in Longmont in a variety of ways, and now is the regional editor of the Longmont and Broomfield Leader online news source. Sonia Ketting made the drive from Fort Collins. And some of you will remember in the days of Sesame Street when they were teaching children similarities and differences, and it would be like, which of these are not like the others? You're going to hear from Sonia about a really interesting kind of cutting-edge program. She's not a journalist, but she's deeply involved with the League of Women Voters, especially on this last point of accountability. So we're looking forward to hearing that part of the story. And the other end of this panel is Sergio Angeles. Sergio is the executive director of Longmont Public Media, who is streaming his enterprise, streaming this program, and makes all kinds of content available through Longmont Public Media. As the conversation goes along, at whatever point you all feel like you'd like to share more with this audience and the public about how to get involved, the kinds of opportunities to get involved with what you do, I wouldn't want anybody to leave here and not know, gosh, how do I connect with the League, or how do I connect with Longmont Public Media, the Observer, or the Courier, or the Times Call. So with that, we started the first program with a panel of journalists who started talking. We asked them to talk about where we are right now with journalism, news, and accountability, and where we came from. Right? So I don't want to cover the where we came from, kind of we got that if people watched the first episode. I do want to start with, from your perspectives, where are we? And then we're going to, then the conversations, I want the conversation to go to where we're headed. So less about the past and more about the future. So Sergio, I'll just going to start down there. Every one of these questions except one, I have one specifically, Sonia, for you, and then we'll see who wants to weigh in after that. Every question I have is for the whole panel. So you don't have, you know, if you don't want to repeat what others have said, just say enough has been said, but I want to invite all of you to have a chance to help build this narrative on each of these questions. But I'll start with you, Sergio, and then we'll just work up the panel and see how it goes from there.
Sure. So I think that's a really interesting question to start off with of kind of what we see is happening now. And from my young perspective, obviously I still see rise of social media, although it is kind of declining somewhat within the youth. I see more and more sources of places where people can consume content of all different types of content. I also see rise of AI technology and how you can now do text to AI to images, and Facebook is working on AI text to video, and what those implications are from a news, information, and accountability perspective. I also still see, you know, division across the U.S. within our community. That's something I don't think we've figured out quite yet. I also think we haven't figured out how do we ensure something is in fact truthful, and how do we establish what those protocols are, and that's just some of what I currently see now.
I would suggest that we have fallen really far from the pinnacle of journalism in the 1970s when, you know, Woodward and Bernstein in the Vietnam War, and they were heroes. Journalists were heroes. And today, not only is the landscape so fragmented because we have so much media coming at us, but journalists are actually being canceled sometimes just for being the messenger or maybe having an opinion based on all that they've seen. So I do hold hope, but it's a precarious time for democracy.
You know, I have to agree with Sergio. There's still a lot of division out there, and I think there's a lot of mistrust of the media, and I think this is a really exciting time for some of us in journalism to try to bring back some of that trust, but it is a very tall mountain to climb.
I see this really as a time of transition. I think back to 20 years ago and how different things were in the newspaper, in the daily newspaper, than they are now. And there are some real challenges out there, but you know, part of what I do in my day job is try to solve problems, and that's what I see. We're in that situation right now where we're trying to solve that problem of credibility, of how do we end the divisiveness, how do we get truthful information out to people. But there are a lot of things that you've mentioned. You know, everybody's a reporter now. They've got a cell phone that takes videos. We see that in law enforcement now, and how much change that has brought, sometimes for the better, things that went on before that were never discovered. Now they are.
I think we're in the middle of a time of change now. It is difficult to address this without talking about what was.
Yeah.
I think if you went back 10 or 15 years and you had a panel of journalists up here, it would not be a group that's representing the media companies that you currently see. The Times Call would have been probably the gorilla in the room. What we face now, and I'm sure it's nothing different from what everyone else here faces, is an environment in which resources are more scarce for newspapers. You spoke of the old days of newspapers. If you even went back 15 years, you would find a newsroom at the Times Call that had a dozen to 15 reporters just for this newspaper. Now we're working with three. The challenge for us, I think one of you mentioned challenging times. We're in challenging times because we're wanting to do the same work, but we have fewer resources to do it. And we are up against an environment in which everyone's a reporter, and in which there are challenges to whether what we're saying is truthful or factual or whether we're fake. That's something I think that we continue to address. I think it's something everyone on this panel probably deals with every day, which is how do we take the resources we have and do good work with what we have? Not to prolong this, but if you went back, there was a time when the Times Call had a reporter covering Carbon Valley, and a reporter covering Lyons, and a reporter covering Weld County, and a reporter covering Boulder County, and a reporter covering the State House. And those days are over. We're not going to get those back. So we're in a time of figuring out what to do next.
John, I think you have one reporter covering all those, don't you, right now?
almost, yes.
Just being facetious.
The challenge is, as you find, it's difficult for a reporter who's been given a certain beat to even focus enough on that beat because he's being pulled to do other work.
So you all may have touched on implications, but I want to make certain before we leave this. You made a reference to a perilous time for democracy. If you want to unpack, are there implications that you see given the transition, and why should, from your perspectives, why should anybody in this hall or in this community care about those implications?
Well, in reference to democracy being in the balance, I think journalism has been very important in our Constitution. And the League of Women Voters specifically has built decades upon educating voters. And how do we do that? Well, I mean, journalism is a large part of that. And if the trust falls out and the staff falls out, well, then you're left to anecdotal stories that lead people who maybe don't have the civic education, aren't interested, or pulled in so many directions. And that's where it's convenient to call things fake. And so all the disinformation, misinformation that's out there, it's messing with the ability to have good voters. That's the foundation. I mean, we're a democracy. People have to be smart enough to vote well. And if they don't have the right facts, how can they?
Any other comments about implications and why anyone should care?
I think that's a question we should all figure out how to answer. I mean, obviously, all the people here seems like they care about what those implications are, but where's everybody else? You know, where's, you know, we have a city of almost 100,000 people. Why aren't they watching this? Why aren't they participating? Where's the disconnect between, you know, journalism, accountability, and the rest of the community? And how do we fix that? I think that's the question I think we should all figure out how to answer.
I have had the occasion to receive emails in my role as city council member and, you know, and otherwise. I'm doing this as a volunteer, not as a city council member. I want anybody to know that. But as Justin did the invitation, introduction, you know, he commented on that. And it is easy to recognize when you have strong opinions grounded in little or no information. And that maybe is the what's perilous here, or it creates peril for the society. So let's expand this just a bit. What's the relationship? You're now all actively engaged in some form of some shape or form of informing the public. So what's the relationship between journalism, news, and accountability in a healthy democracy, or a healthy society in a democracy?
I think that the thinking about this question, the First Amendment comes to mind. I think that freedom of speech, freedom of the press, all of the freedoms you find in the First Amendment are freedoms that contribute to a healthy society. I don't think that they contribute to a society in which everyone gets along necessarily, but I think they're necessary for there to be dialogue, for opinions to be proposed, to be considered. If you look where there aren't these protections, you might see what you would consider a civil society, but that's actually a repressed society. So the importance to our government, the importance to a healthy society, is that there is a freedom to speak your mind. I would say that from my perspective, that freedom also comes with a responsibility. It's not licensed to do whatever you want, at least from my perspective, but it is. But it is a freedom to do the best you can in terms of presenting information and to giving the public a voice.
Other comments?
I think one of the things that John mentioned, if you look around the world, and you do see other societies that do not have freedom of press. You know, we talk about First Amendment, and everybody thinks of freedom of speech, but the press journalism is in the First Amendment to the United States Constitution. We probably haven't done a really good job of reinforcing that and talking about that. I mean, we do our jobs of reporting about everybody else, but we don't talk so much about what we do.
I was going to say, I think there's numerous studies done about the benefits of having news for a community. But I think one of the things I think they don't really touch on is the archival purpose of news and how it serves as a history to the city of what happened that specific day and how can we learn from that if we were to look back on it, you know, 20, 30 years from now. We have a record that we can look at.
Yeah, we could spend the rest of the day, I suspect, just talking about what we should learn and are we learning, right, from where we've come from, where we're headed. So if you want to weave that into your responses to these questions about what we're learning and how we apply it, it would be, I think, worth the time. the last of the three kind of sub-parts of this topic, right, journalism, news, and accountability. I want to zero in on just the accountability part of this right now. Do you have concerns, generally, about the accountability of government institutions and elected officials, those who govern these institutions, given, John, what you've described as how thin, you know, your staff, how thin you are in staffing to cover these things? Biff, yours is more focused, I suspect, in what happens in NIWAT. But I know you cover more than that. So, for all of you, just on this question of the topic of accountability, What are your concerns about the degree to which, the form in which we are holding or not, public institutions and elected officials accountable?
Well, it's harder to do right now, just because of lack of resources, as John has mentioned. And you know, we in NIWAT, we cover NIWAT Gun Barrel, but we're governed by Boulder County because we're unincorporated. We don't have a city councilman, so Tim, you can't run city council in NIWAT. But
that's good to know.
But we still pay attention to what the county does and what the local improvement district that we have does, what the sheriff does, what the Mountain View Fire Department does. We pay attention to all of those things. On the good side, though, is that there are so many other ways to get information that we never used to have. If you think back 30 years ago, we didn't have the internet, we didn't have email. People would have conversations on the phone. That was not discoverable. Now we have emails that are discoverable, and we can do that fairly easily with records requests. So we have some resources that offset some of the stuff that used to go on, backroom stuff that was hard to get at.
I would have to add to that, like, in addition to having the ability to do all of those requests and find those emails, there's a lot to go through that goes back to the resource problem again. The other thing I find as far as accountability for governments is, you know, finding governments that and candidates and government officials who have not really had experience with newsrooms because they because deserts have popped up. So then when you bring in news to that area, like, I don't even know what to do with a newsroom who is trying to hold me accountable. I don't have a process or procedure for this. I've got to figure this out before I can even talk to you. So, like, with the reduction of news in society and newsrooms becoming smaller, I think governments in some places have, you know, pulled back on what they've had to share and how transparent they've had to be. And when they get asked, they're like, oh, wait a minute, I don't know how to deal with this. So I find that to be one of my biggest challenges, actually.
I would say, you know, whether a politician is surly or ignorant, I mean, there have always been those. But the accountability for that is a huge challenge now, because ignorance will step up. If they never see a reporter, if no one ever shows up, then they might not be educated in sunshine laws, and they might not realize that you can't just step behind a door to make an employee decision and, oh, by the way, let's approve this and that, and, you know, all these conversations. And they don't understand. Who knows what governments even give that training? So there's something happening there. It's not unusual or new to have politicians that are surly or whatever it is, but it is new that they are not being observed as much as in times past.
Government has a history of trying to suppress or hide what it knows from the public. That doesn't go for every person who works in government, for every elected official, but it's true, and especially when you get to communities where there is not the level of knowledge about public meetings laws and about open records laws, that you can run into a bureaucrat who feels as if he or she owns that information and says, well, you can't have that, when in fact it's information that is collected and held and paid for by the public and by taxpayers. That continues to be a challenge. It's not just at levels like town boards. You know, recently, the University of Colorado named a single finalist for president, which suggests to anyone looking from the outside that perhaps there were some finalists that no one else knew about or that they didn't want anyone to know about. We don't know that to be true, but when a public institution is searching for someone who is going to lead that institution and spend and be responsible for public dollars, it's good for the public to be able to know how they go about their business. I will say, and this gets to our resources, reporting is really hard work. It really is, to follow let's say it starts with a news tip. It's like, hey, I'm hearing about this going on. Well, you have to research that yourself. You have to track down the right people to talk to. You have to do open records requests. You have to read it. You have to understand it. And then you have to find individuals working in the government who are willing to cooperate with you. And that assumes that they even know what the rules are or if they're required to cooperate with you. Generally, my view of things is that when anyone operates in secrecy or in the dark, something bad's going to happen. And that happens when you've got elected officials or government administrators who feel that no one's watching them. I think there's a greater temptation to see what you can get away with. That doesn't mean that that's true of every situation, but it doesn't take many of those types of situations to have an effect on the public.
Yeah, great observation. As one who sits in one of those chairs, what goes on in my head is all the time, somebody's always watching. So just take that to the bank. Any other comments just on this? Because I want to drill down. Sonia, the League, these all folks are involved in emerging, traditional or emerging forms of media, right? I mean, I don't know, Biff, how you would characterize the left-hand courier, left-hand Valley Courier, as traditional or avant-garde. Certainly the Times Call, even with the changes, would be a kind of reflect where we've come from in traditional media. But the leader's different, right? And certainly LPM is different in terms of media. You're not here as a media representative. You're here as a League representative, really focused on accountability of public institutions. And the League is in the process of rolling out, piloting right now, the Citizen Observer pilot, right? Citizen mm-hmm. Observer Corps mm-hmm. has been around for a while, I understand. But you're piloting a new approach to this. Talk about what the League's up to. Talk about why. If folks in this audience or in Longmont would like to connect with what you're doing in Fort Collins, it's important people understand how to make those connections. Talk about what the League's doing.
Oh, sure. Okay, I'll try to make a long story short. In 1920, the League started educating voters as soon as women got suffrage. And just in case anyone wouldn't know this, men are often members of League and very welcome to League, but the name remains because of the homage to suffrage. So voter education is a pivotal piece. And just in 2022, they adopted at the national level the new slogan to carry us forward is making democracy work. And I actually am a journalist formerly in my career and my education, so in small newspapers too. So I have some experience there and grew up watching Walter Cronkite with my dad and the Vietnam War. And I saw that pinnacle of journalism and have always been civically minded. So when the League picked a slogan of making democracy work, and then I noticed that journalism wasn't part of that. Nowhere were they addressing what has happened to journalism in the past 10 years. I was kind of on fire and made some presentations that other Leaguers definitely recognized, and we coalesced a group that's the News Access and Literacy Task Force. Our state league, the Colorado League of Women Voters, welcomed that and adopted that as part of our making democracy work. Colorado is concerned about it. We'll see about the rest of the nation, but it starts here. And I am first a member of the Larimer County League. The Observer Corps is something that we've long had. League has lots of opportunities to engage, we'll say, depending on your interest. One of those things that always sounded intriguing to me was Observer Corps, though I never did it. A few do it. It means you have to show up to meetings and sit through them, and sometimes you don't want to do that on a cold winter night or, you know, there's always something else to do. But some did it. But then what would happen is they would get elected to council. Like, they go run for council, and then they can't do it anymore. And also, those notes were going nowhere. People would sit, and they would see neat things, and they would share information, and once in a while, it was useful to one of our teams working on something. But oftentimes, it was just a meeting regular, and with the notes not going anywhere, it wasn't so compelling. It was kind of languishing. And so then, when the News Access and Literacy Task Force began at the state level, I was introduced to these excellent partners working in journalism. And we clicked, and I happened to mention the Observer Corps that still will ever exist for League, and we started thinking, what if it wasn't just internal notes? What if we could turn this, you know, to face the public or the news? And then the idea just took off from there because all the partners were ready to stand up and support us. This is one of the solutions for the problems of journalism today as put forth by the Deliberative Journalism Project. It's a project of Colorado State University's Center for Public Deliberation. They're always working on what they call wicked problems. And citizen reporting is like solution number three. What if we brought citizens back to do this? Would it maybe help build trust? Because it's not like, oh, a journalist that has maybe a secret agenda or something. These are just your neighbors doing this. And indeed, there is some evidence to show that it can work because one of our kind partners back on the East Coast, the City Bureau, it's called, they have 2,000 citizens showing up to events across the Eastern Seaboard. And it's working so well that they received a grant last year for $10 million to expand. So people like it. And so when anybody would say, oh, who's going to do that? You know, that's for wonks. Well, these people love it. And what they see, instead of being, you know, meetings where, you know, who are you? What are you doing? They're welcomed into meetings. They're known enough now that people will slow down and say, oh, let's not use acronyms because there's a documenter in the room. You know, help them get set up. Help. And then these people that are doing the documenting are their own club, and they'll share information, have get-togethers, like, well, here's what's happened here. And then the information coming out of there has actually created some news streams where journalists can go look, anyone can go look about some things that are percolating through various meetings. Not just meetings that now newspapers can't report because the staff has been gutted, but many of these meetings were never reported. There's all kinds of citizen boards. Larimer County alone has 100 public meetings we could be attending. That's a tall order, and we'll have to, you know, parse to what's most important of a moment, but there's a lot of work to do, and there's a lot of people that are interested to do it.
So, as journalists listen to what the league's doing, I guess a couple of questions. One, does that spark interest, concern, or opportunity to connect with the league in terms of what your roles are, in terms of accountability?
All three.
Yeah.
So, you know, really, I think certainly interest. You know, in order for this to work, I'm a fairly distrustful person. I'm skeptical because that's my job, is to be skeptical. So I think it's a good idea, you know, and I'm not here to make a deal with you in front of everyone, but right. But certainly this is something that I would be willing to look into. Yeah.
I think it's something that we have kind of adopted, maybe a little bit of that model. About 6 months ago, we lost 4 key people, all in 10 days. Mm. And so we were in crisis mode. We were just coming out of the pandemic. We reached out to people in NIWAT, in the community, in the business community, and said, we need help. We need people to cover the local sports teams. We need people to tell us what's going on, to show up at an event, at a meeting. And we now have about 20 people that do that. Some of them write pretty well. Some of them need a lot of work. But we get the information, and we do have a good team of editors, and so we're able to cover more things than we were before by using essentially citizen journalists. And you know, a lot of these things are not controversial. They're public events that go on, and it's just, you know, kind of setting the tone for the community. But what it does is it builds that trust, because now we have those 20 people that we're communicating with every week, and everybody that they know, and they develop that trust because they probably already were going to be at that meeting. It's worked pretty well in the last 6 months.
What are you hearing as you listen to this, Macy, about the way does the leader take advantage of this, or might the leader take advantage of the Citizen Observer Corps?
Yeah, I mean, I think this has been a question, citizen journalism has been a question that media has been trying to wrap its head around for some time now. There are lots of programs that have experimented with it. How do we do it? How do we make sure that the level is, you know, what we would expect for a journalist and something that we can send out to our public and be trusted as well? So I'm extremely interested in this. It's something, as a digital newspaper, sometimes I play with myself, inviting, you know, just the public that says, hey, listen, I'm covering, I'm at every football game. Can I take photos for you? Can I report the score for you? That kind of thing. And so I just, you know, yeah, that's something really easy, and I welcome some of that in. I'm like John, and there's a lot of times I'm also skeptical and whatnot, and some people are like, hey, I can do this really deep investigative dive on something. And then I'm kind of like, oh, I don't know. So I am extremely interested in how maybe this particular program could integrate into a more modern media. And I like the idea that it could create a better trust, because I think that is a big problem in news for the last few years especially.
What gets you, the two of you, and Biff, maybe you as well, over the skepticism or the hurdle of skepticism or being less skeptical about a contributor or a particular story?
I think it's going to be an experiment, and I think it's going to be time and willingness to, you know, just try it out, be open-minded, and you know, it'll take some time of vetting that and understanding, if for this particular project, understanding their process and how they go about training these folks to be unbiased and, you know, yeah, just stepping back from our own skepticism and saying we're going to be open-minded and give you the benefit of the doubt after we understand your process, and then letting it go and seeing what happens.
And I can respond to that, but I want to give Sergio a chance to speak to the question.
No, I was going to say I think it's a brilliant idea. This was something that when Macy, myself, and Scott Converse started the Lawman Observer, it was back in 2017. We labeled it as a makerspace of news. It was basically this concept of citizen journalism, and what we saw was just really the lack of education of people knowing what actually goes on to produce news. And we found ourselves to just be training more and more people so that we can collect the initial information and then figure out what to do with it. Obviously, I think from a public media perspective, you know, that would be a great opportunity to, you know, train folks of, hey, you can use this type of camera to live stream it, and now you have text notes, you have video notes, and you can watch it back and, you know, do all kinds of cool stuff with it. We'd love to partner on that.
Yeah, I was going to say that it's not it's not that I'm distrustful of the league or anything like that. It's that I would look at this as I would want to meet these people. You know, if someone says, hey, I would like to sit in on the Firestone town board meetings, mm-hmm. I would say, let's have coffee. I want to find out more about you, because if I'm going to trust the information you're giving me, I'd like to get to know you. It's the way it works with reporters as well. The other is, you know, just a lack of understanding still about what it really is. I think for me, it's a matter of learning you've explained it well, but I would still want to learn more about how it works and the motivation of people who want to do it, things like that.
I can explain more.
Yeah.
While you're all journalists working for that cause, this is not just for journalists. In fact, League is very specific to say this is for the public. The journalists can take a peek, we hope we help, but it's for the public. And so whether we, you know, meet your quality standard for what you need in your paper is secondary to just showing up. So I don't want to frighten potential observers and thinking, well, I can't write, I wouldn't even qualify. Just the fact of showing up to observe a meeting and make sure, is the ADA access still open? Did anybody call a secret session? Who's fidgeting with their phone? Is it contentious? Is there bullying in the meeting? What are some topics? Just witnessing that is huge, witness is everything here. So whether we can produce stories that would go to print, we don't know that yet. Maybe some, maybe not all, but the project is really for the public and to just bear more witness to governance everywhere, to toes to the fire. And it's not an adversarial thing at all. It's, you know, we hope to be welcomed. And our training, which we are working on, we're well aware of Society Professional Journalist rules for accountability and checking. So if ever we saw something and it was said, well, we're probably going to have it on video. This is part of the training where it's at all possible to have it on video. So if we say something, then it'll be time-stamped. You can go back. You can see for yourself. So a reporter could have confidence. They're not just taking some, you know, league member's word for it. That would be part of the training. Society of Professional Journalists somewhat applies, but these aren't journalists. So veracity would be, you know, we're looking to not put out false information. And freedom of information. The League of Women Voters was very involved in Sunshine Laws, 1976. We were right there at the beginning. We're still a member of the Colorado Freedom of Information Coalition, and we want all these observers to know their rights to participate in a meeting. And if it's a problem, well, Colorado Freedom of Information Coalition will know it, and we'll be able to follow up, and there won't be these things going on where they think no one's looking, so they're just going to have a meeting at a house, or they're just going to show up at a different time or reschedule. But just by publishing the agenda, if it's given, having video, which would be great, the date, I mean, this kind of a record is amazing for meetings. You could go back and you could see what a council member once said and then how they voted, and it will be up to journalists to still do some drawing of the lines, because citizen journalists don't necessarily have the full picture. I mean, they might have just moved to town and they don't even know that what was said has significance to something happening in the community. So the journalists will need to know that, but they won't know anything if we're not there.
I think that actually is great, and I applaud what you're doing, actually.
I think to kind of tie this back to the first question you asked him about what we're seeing now is an experimentation of models. I mean, we have, you know, some for-profit models, we see some non-profit models, and this is another model that could possibly work to, you know, produce journalism in a city or in a news desert. I think we should continue experimenting with different models and see what works and what doesn't.
As I'm listening, and I think about what Biff shared a bit ago in his introduction about everybody has a cell phone today. So everybody can record, everybody can post. There's, you know, on any social media platform. Well, there are some people are restricted from some platforms. We know that. We've heard a lot about that in the news lately. But in the first of these two sessions, we wanted to drill down a little bit on this idea of standards, right? What are the standards that journalists apply to themselves? And for those of us who are citizen activists, right, I think of myself when just hosting this program, what are the standards that I should apply to myself? Or if I'm going to post something on, you know, a social media platform, Facebook, or if I'm going to tweet something or whatever, what's the standard I should hold myself accountable to? And it's been useful to listen to journalists talk about those standards, and then obviously the League is very mindful of what those are and how they play out. At the end of the day, what would you want? What would the journalists here want, those of us who are amateurs at this or volunteers leaning in, to have a better understanding of, and maybe you've already said it, about the standards we should hold ourselves to?
So I'll just give you a handful. These are things I tell reporters, and it's not an exhaustive list, but it's a good basic set of standards. And one is be transparent about who you are and what you're doing. Our expectation is that if you're going to work for the Times Call and you are doing work for the Times Call, that when you're speaking with someone, that's the first thing out of your mouth. You should not misrepresent what you're doing. So represent who you are honestly and what you're doing. The other is, and I tell people to know their biases. So basically when you get to work, understand that you have biases. And I'm not necessarily speaking political biases. Each of us has a background, you know, family we grew up with, maybe our personal experiences. It could be political. But understand that you have them so that you know that you can set them aside. Because I think if you don't realize you have a bias, it's probably more easy to succumb to whatever that bias is because you don't recognize it. And then this one's a big one. I've probably said this 100 times to people, which is report what you know. Don't report what you think you know. Report what you know. So if someone, if a reporter says, I'm not sure what to write here, the first question I ask them is, well, what do you know? And then I'll let them start talking, and then I can say, well, but do you really know that, or do you think you know that? So that's another one, which is report what you know. And then the other is never knowingly report something or write something or publish something that you know is false. I mean, you can make a mistake, you can get something wrong, but never knowingly report something that you know is not true. Those are four. I mean, each person may have their own, there are other rules you can have. I've known people that said, one of my rules is I won't even accept a free cup of coffee at the council meeting, whatever, which is fine. But those are, I think, good four basic rules.
Any other comments?
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I would say one of the things I try to talk to my team a lot about, some of them have, a long history in media, and sometimes they forget that people are human and treat people as though they're human. So they've reached out to a city council member and they're like, oh, it's 2 hours. I haven't heard back yet. I'm like, that person may have been busy today. Or there's a big crisis happening at our schools and you're expecting a 5-second turnaround for that person. Think about it. We are human, and if someone had those demands on us in our time, we would be upset by that. This person is human as well. They're doing their job, and they're prioritizing based on, if it's a school, like the safety of the students or the staff, or any number of reasons. Or maybe they're having a really bad day, and they're sick. I mean, COVID should have taught us that, reminded us that we're human and we get sick. Everybody gets sick, and you should allow people to get sick. I mean, it sounds silly, but treat people like they're human. And, for the public, I think technology very much is seconds away. It's right there for each and every one of us. But, as the public receiving that and as us as journalists, please do remember we're human too, and we're doing that just as quickly as we can as well. But I mean, we don't want to send out news that's fake, knowingly not true, just to meet this expectation that it needs to be on your phone or in your email or wherever you get your news that second that it's happening. That we're really trying to make sure we have our facts straight, that we understand the story, that we understand what's happening, and as she mentioned, piecing it together to something that might have been a little bit bigger that you may not have known about. It does take us time because we have to wait on our sources too. And sometimes we have to make sure that we're waiting because they're human and not because they're in a position of power and they can just give it to us. So yeah, I have to say, like adding to John's list, that we are all human and we should all treat each other as though we're human.
Yeah, I would add to John's list too that things that we pay attention to are conflicts of interest, to recognize that and know when that's time to back off. And also, I see this with young writers especially, is when you get an assignment to make sure you're presenting both sides of the issue. You may feel like this side is right and that's where you're aligned, but your job as a journalist, reporter, you've got to report about both sides and say what the other people are saying. And sometimes even when it's a little outrageous and you think it's outrageous, that's how you help people understand what's true and what's not, is by presenting both sides. I always remember in law school, that was one of the first exercises that I was shocked by. It's like you're assigned to write a brief on a particular side of an issue. And then the next week you come in and you're supposed to do oral argument on the other side. Oh my gosh, how did you do that? Well, you learn to look at both sides of the issue. We probably have it a little easier in Niwot than you guys do because we have a smaller community. There's probably 4,500 people, if you count Gun Barrel, 10 to 15,000. But if we get information from somebody in the public, citizen, journalism, whatever, I always look in and try to decide if they have an agenda. I do a lot of work in nonprofit stuff, and I notice the same thing. You ask for volunteers, be careful, because you get people sometimes that have an agenda. And those are the people that we don't particularly want to participate. But when we have, you know, 20 people on our staff and somebody else that contacts us, I can contact those 20 people that I have confidence in and ask them about this person if they have any background, and then we can make that judgment.
We're going to pivot just a bit, but before we do, Sonia, for anybody in this room or who would be watching or watches the recording of this, how would they get involved if they wanted to get involved with the Citizen Observer Corps pilot project?
I can give you that, but first I want to respond to this discussion of journalist ethics and how we act. To be certain, if you were an observer, there's not this back and forth with having to check in with your biases, and because observers don't speak. They're mute. They show up with a league badge. The protocol has always been that an observer will stand, introduce themselves, I'm an observer with the League of Women Voters, and take a seat. Does the recording equipment work? They're just sitting there, you know, ooh, that might have been a juicy, you know, click, click. Like, when you think something neat, you're just marking it. But they're not, like, dialoguing. So checking in with the biases and so forth, it's a little different. However, all of these observers would be League of Women Voters members, and in stepping into membership, there is a very nonpartisan stance. So you leave all your partisan stuff at the door, and the League has nothing to do with candidates other than forums at election time. We're all about issues. We're looking at issues, drilling down on issues. So they would likely have a mind that is interested in the issues, but it's a mute voice in these meetings. So navigating some of the stuff that journalists must is going to be a little different for an observer. To get involved, if you're interested at all, the website to find the application is lwv-larimercounty.org. That's the landing page, and then you'll see there's projects it pulls down to Observer. You'll find the page where it says Observer, and you just can click there, and your information will come to us, and then we'll reach out when we're ready to do our first training, subsequent trainings, and we'll find out about everybody who wants to participate. I can also describe that in this moment, it's for Larimer County. We had to tighten up for budget, but more specifically for the metrics of it, so we could see which Larimer County news outlets we were touching and Larimer County meetings we could cover. But the hope is that this would expand much broader, and Colorado League has 19 local leagues. We're over in Grand Junction. We've got, you know, leagues all across the state. So I got designs on taking this to a state level. But right now the focus would be on Larimer County public meetings. And then, you know, hopefully we take off quickly from there.
We understand pilot programs and the importance of data collection and testing, and then taking to scale those things that work. So we understand how that works.
Yeah.
Great information. I'm going to move on unless there are other comments right here. That we did get a before we walked in, we had a question from the audience. I'm going to ask the question and see what your thoughts are. I don't know how many people are in the audience, but I'm guessing we don't have a full house, or we wouldn't have had this question. What does the size of today's audience tell you about the state of and interest in local? This says broadcasting, but I would think news reporting, whether it's broadcasting or in print forms.
Can I ask a question of the audience?
Sure.
If anyone's willing to speak up, how did you learn about this?
Museum catalog. For those who are watching the recording, what we've heard is the Times Call, the museum catalog, and probably that scintillating little video on Longmont Public Media. Maybe not that. So any other
Anywhere else? Those are, yeah.
Okay. Well, what it tells me is that these are the people. I'm gonna state the obvious. That not only this is the group of people who learned about it, the people who have an interest, a personal interest, that will be willing to take a couple of hours out or an hour out of their Sunday, but then three, it's the people who had time to do it as well. This is not to say anything bad about anyone here, but clearly there are a lot of other people who found better things to do today, I guess. The thing is, I think that I don't want to be dismissive of anyone else in the community, but there are a lot of other things to be doing on a Sunday for people. We are in a community where there are outdoor pursuits they could be doing today. It's a beautiful day. People who have kids at home who aren't going to think, hey, I'm not going to find someone to watch the kids while I'm there. So I will just simply be appreciative of the group that's here. And I don't know how many people are watching, but I'm going to, can we find out how many people are watching?
Well, I don't know that we have
yes,
that
we
real
can.
Time.
Okay, yeah. I'd be curious to find out how many, because it could be that this is actually fewer than half or a much smaller group. So it's hard for me with, I don't know that I have the background to say what this means outside of the fact that there certainly is a core group of people in this community who care enough to come to an event like this and to learn and be willing to hear us speak. And you're also welcome. I'm sure I can't speak for everyone, but any of us, I'm sure, is available to speak afterward as well.
Yeah. Well, I'm encouraged the fact that the museum was willing to let us use this great facility on a Sunday afternoon and that we would have anybody show up. So I appreciate that. Any other comments before I'm going to ask? Go ahead.
I would say I'm not concerned. I mean, being from the league, we're used to this, especially now in a day of Zoom meetings. If you give people the chance to tune in at home, well, they will, and that's been a gift because so many more people. I mean, you can dialogue with people in Denver who would have never driven an hour to meet up. And as far as the critique that it's the white hairs who show up. Well, I mean, yeah, because many are retired. They have more. That's not new. This has always been the case. Your civic mind has more opportunity as you get closer to retirement. And, that's maybe stereotyping, but it just is that. And we're still going to do the work. It's not about growing a huge audience. It's never been about growing a huge audience. It's about doing the right work. And when the audience pays attention, wants to go back and find that information, it's recorded.
I have two questions here that are related to information and misinformation. Let me read them both, you decide where you'd like to go. Here's the first question. In the effort to be fair, has the responsibility to call out misinformation suffered? So here's a related question. Presenting the views of both sides equally can sometimes mean presenting a falsehood as facts. How do journalists resolve that? Right, so both of these questions both address this issue of misinformation, disinformation, and the role of reporting, right, and what consumers of the news are getting from whatever feeds, right, platforms or traditional news. As journalists, how do you deal with this issue of fair and balanced and also calling out what may be mis or disinformation?
I think it's a lot of research. It's a lot and lot of research. I mean, I can spend an entire day on a subject. Just, this doesn't feel right. Let me go look into it. Calling people, people I trust and whatever, get their idea. And then, the next person I call will completely negate that. So now I'm back at square one. It takes a long and winding road, and it goes back to, again, doing your diligence, really diving in there, and sometimes it's presenting someone's idea and making it known that, like, this was unverified. I don't know, it's just, like I said, a long road of trying to do your due diligence.
So, and I want to make sure I understand the two questions. One regards how we call out misinformation, mm-hmm. and then the other is if we're presenting what are two sides, sometimes we may be giving a falsehood A voice.
As a side, yeah.
As a side, okay. Well, I would say in terms of calling out misinformation, the way I would look at this is there, yes, we could editorially, or that means in terms of our opinion, call this out. We could write an editorial. We no longer have an editorial board, so that's not going to happen on us, you know, unfortunately, for the Times Call. But when it comes to our reporting, I put the onus on the reporter and on me and on other editors to work to make sure that what we're reporting is verifiable. There was a headline in the Times Call yesterday. It was a story that clearly had two sides, and each side had their own what they want. The sides disagreed. To the extent of reporting that, it's important still that we present both sides. And I assure you that there's going to be someone on each side who's going to say, well, the other side is representing a falsehood. So when it comes to reporting, I still want to try to present both sides, but tell the reporter, hey, you're going to hear this from this side and this from that side. Your job is to seek verification from each side that they have some evidence of what they're saying. And I know that's kind of... That was kind of nebulous, but I'd be happy to speak with anyone about it.
Yeah, it's a tough call.
The other thing is, I think I probably did kind of touch on both of those. The other is I handle the submissions that come to our opinion page. And certainly the majority of people who have anything to write to us about are writing from a particular point of view, and they will present their... I'll put in quotes, facts, to support what they say. I work really hard to try to make sure I vet those and bounce those back to the writers and say, hey, you're giving me this number or this stat to support what you're saying. Can you give me your source for that? It's really hard to do anything that's exhaustive. The best we can do, I can probably speak for others here, the best we can do is the best we can do to find out for ourselves. If I find evidence that is clearly contradictory, then I will say, look, you can't say that. You can't put this forward as a fact. But if I find something that might support it, I'm willing to have a little gray area and let someone say it.
Any other comments on this?
Yeah, I think I agree with John. It's a hard call, but that's part of what we do is we make those judgments about what's a fact, what's an opinion, what's a mixed thing, and try to, again, because if somebody is saying something that is wrong, I probably want to report that they're saying that in some circumstances, because that's important for people to know as well. But then I'm going to follow up with whatever I've been able to verify that indicates it's not true. I think you have to do that to have credibility with people that are reading what you're writing about. And as John said, too, it's hard with the resources that we don't have anymore. And there's only so much you can do.
Yeah.
But you have to make an effort to do what you can to verify things. And that, I guess that's one other advantage we have now that we didn't have 30 years ago, is you can go to the internet and you can check things. Before, you know, I'm down at the law school library, or I'm down at the library and I'm trying to find an article about something, and, you know, I'm not going to have time to do that. Now I can do it.
I will say this, and it was I will credit a woman who wrote a letter to our open forum in the past few days about this. There was a question about, you know, I think it was about critical race theory. It's like, well, what is critical race theory? And writer one said, critical race theory is this. And the next letter writer said, well, critical race theory is that. And the
I
third
I
writer,
remember reading those
remember
letters.
That? Okay, the third writer, I really appreciated. She said, well, Google's going to give you the answer you're looking for.
Yeah.
And if, depending on what you usually look up and which sites you normally go to, Google will push that to the top of your it'll be that'll be the top answer for you. And so, you know, and for me, it's like, well, I should have known that. But, you know, the thing is that what you're looking for, especially these days, is the very thing you're going to find, because there is an algorithm somewhere that's going to make sure you get it.
Interesting. Well, having been the recipient of on occasion or two, phone calls from you to verify what someone else has written. I know that you do what you just described, because I received those phone calls. We're going to run out of time here, so here's two questions, right? We'll take them one at a time. But the first is, the league really does count on volunteers. I believe that's true for the Observer. I know it is for Longmont Public Media. I assume it may be true for you two fellows as well. So the question is, for organizations that do count on volunteers, for people to lean into what you're doing, what would you share with this audience and those who watch listen to the recording about the examples of volunteerism, right? What are the kinds of things you need, and how do they get involved with your efforts?
I'm just going to correct you. It's not the Observer anymore.
Oh, I'm sorry. The Leader.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And that is actually a big confusion, seeing how Sergio, Scott, and I started the Observer a long time ago, and then it moved into the Leader. And I'm still there, so people still get that very confused.
That would be misinformation, wouldn't it?
But an honest mistake.
It's just a confusion, for sure. But as far as volunteers go, yeah, we definitely do. We love when people send us photos of an event that we weren't able to attend. We have 2.5 staff members in Longmont currently. We work really hard through the week, and we have one person staffing during the weekend. And so we cannot physically be everywhere. So we love when people send us photos from their experience, such as the Halloween parade, which we were at, but or some other little event in town. Those are wonderful, and tell us a few things about it. Sometimes we can turn that into a really quick story. Sometimes it's great when people tell us, here's, a little thing happening in our neck of the world. Those are wonderful ways to helping us out. It's just some of the easy things for people just to jump in, for sure.
Yeah, I think we depend on a lot of folks to do that. I'll give you an example. Recently, we had a member of the community who's well known, had a pizza place in Niwot for 25 years, died in a tragic car accident at the Diagonal and Niwot Road. We got an email from a person who lives right next to that and heard the crash. And she let us know that one of the three green lights was out, trying to find out why this happened. Why would somebody pull out and be hit broadside? That light was out. We went over and checked it out, took pictures, and you can see that the lights are not synchronized. So on the west side, it turns green before the east side. And if you're on the east side and you're looking only straight ahead, you see a green light over there because this one is out. Those kind of things are really essential to finding out those kinds of things. The Department of Transportation, I said, contact them. They did. They fixed it the next day. But it's those kind of things that people that are out in the community, you hope that you have their trust and confidence so that they will contact you, because then you can follow up on it. And that's the kind of information that we need from volunteers. The other comment I would make about the audience today and the audience online is, I think it's somewhat of a reflection that people perceive that local journalism, the Times Call, the Daily Camera, the Longmont Leader, are doing a pretty good job, because there's more concern, I think, on a national level than there is in Colorado. And the Front Range, I think, is a pretty good place right now. So I don't see that, if we had a big issue that we're not doing our job, then there might be a whole lot more people here.
I will say, and I'll answer your question, but I'll just want to quickly address that. You live in a community that has sort of two newspapers covering you, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, my hometown, Denton, Texas, is a city of 140,000 people that has one newspaper that delivers once a week. They still are online every day, but you've got people who are like, busting their rear ends to cover your community. Yeah. I think that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. How to get involved? Call us. Yeah, you know, the thing is we don't have eyes and ears everywhere. You know, we listen to a police scanner, but if you see something big happen or hear of something, call us. I much prefer that contact that day than the next day when someone calls and says, well, why didn't you cover that? And I'll say, oh, if you'd only called me yesterday, you know, we probably would. Because we don't automatically know everything that's going on. You wouldn't automatically know that green light wasn't working unless someone told you. The other thing is, if you do have an event, if there's something, especially community event, maybe your business did something, email us at yournews@timescall. You can actually send us your photo, send us your little write-up. We'll get that in. The other is, if you have an opinion, share it with us. Send something to our open forum. And call me. My number's in the newspaper. It's online. I think there's at least one of you out there, probably more than one, who's just called me and said, I want to talk to you. I'm reachable.
I think this is a really great example of how you can get involved with Longmont Public Media. If you're interested in maybe doing your own interview show, or maybe you want to film, I don't know, your grandson at a football game and don't know how, we have all the tools and equipment. We teach our community how to do that, and then we help distribute it all for free. And if you want to, you know, get even more involved, you know, we can show you how to switch the cameras so that you can kind of see how the sausage is made kind of behind the scenes and get a better understanding how media works.
And for folks who don't know, I'll just as a volunteer,
yeah.
I've had a chance to watch this unfold. You have a makerspace. In addition to equipment, you've got lots of expertise. If people, you have classes, people can learn how to edit and produce. There's lots of opportunities to build the learning curve, right? Required to really become more and more productive with various kinds of media that LPM's involved with. So here's my last.
Well, I have all kinds of information about volunteering. In an overall perspective, I think that people have been paying a lot more attention. They're critical, and so they're paying more attention. And my hope is that there's going to be a moment where they then engage, from paying attention to engagement. And there's all kinds of opportunity for that in the league, depending on what your interest is. We've got affordable housing issues. We have election reform. There's so many neat things. So if you have an interest, even if it's coming from a point of anger, it really helps to get with others who are thinking on the same things and to do something with that, not just throw your hands up because the news is all bad or all fake or you don't even want it anymore. I mean, we really have to overcome that. Everybody needs to jump in and bail water. And I hope that all of this critical attention that we're giving to the situation, including this panel, that motivates people to, you know, pull up and start things again and take a hard look at what's happening with journalism and democracy.
In the first panel of this two-part series, there were the words news desert. Macy, you mentioned used the term news desert a bit ago, came up frequently, right? And what's happening across the country in terms of news deserts? We promoted this panel with you as the reason we won't become a news desert. You are our local solutions to keep people informed. So we're all grateful for that. And you've touched on the answer to this last question already a little bit, but I want to be more explicit about why you are and why we should be optimistic about the future, about going forward, at least in terms of journalism, news, and accountability.
I think there's always going to be a need for what we do. We're not a news desert, but we're also not a rainforest. I mean, it's this is... I wish it, I mean, it's kind of dry. I wish it weren't. But the thing is that I think as long as there is an interest in the community and learning about the community, there's going to be someone there to meet that need. And it's clearly it's changing. It's going to be different 10 years from now. But I think the positive is that clearly there's an interest even in this community, and we live in a society in which the expectation is our type of operation should be allowed. We're legal. We're allowed to operate. We are protected. We are what we do was envisioned from the beginning of the of our nation, and so that's what to me that's the positive to take from this.
You know, I'm always excited about the news. It's been it was something that I jumped into with Sergio and Scott with 2017, and it was funny because there was a point in my life that I said, "Oh no, never news," and I jumped in, and it's become my entire life, and I love it. But what I think is really exciting is seeing people who have been in this industry for decades also become like have a renewed excitement about how it's evolving and how it's changing and how to get people more involved, because there is a very, you know, real problem that entire communities lose their newsrooms and become a news desert, and corruption sets in and things happen, bad things happen, and like there are many projects throughout Colorado, especially right now, that's moving that forward. And it's just, for me, it's an exciting time to be able to dream and innovate and think of what is next and try something and maybe fail, but maybe it's successful too. But yeah, that's my beauty for the future. It's just a whole lot of excitement.
I will always have hope in the ingenuity of humanity to confront the things that are happening. And so I hold hope there. And I think that, you know, for every crisis, it offers a great coming together. And maybe this is all for a reason, and we can make hay from all the problems, and people will engage like never before.
I think it's just great to see, obviously, five of us here, six of us care, plus all of you that care about this subject. I think that's something to be hopeful about. I also think just the way technology is evolving, I think there's obviously risks to that, but also just benefits to that, making some of what we do easier, which could make, you know, producing news, video, in distributing news and information even easier. Obviously, there's still challenges with that. But just providing more access and just having just a lot more media education so that people know kind of what's going on.
Biff, last word?
I'm optimistic. I think just it's an opportunity to solve a problem. And there's been a lot of change and lots of different ideas, and like you said, some fail, but we try them out. We now publish a print edition every 4 weeks, and the other 3 weeks we're online. So that gives us more revenue for people who subscribe online, but there are not as many people that would like to subscribe or that do subscribe online. I got an email the other day from somebody wondering why we didn't cover the car accident that I just mentioned. I mean, we covered for 3 weeks, but it wasn't a print edition. And it's like, so it gave me a great opportunity to say, look, you're missing out a lot of stuff. If you'd subscribe online, it's not that expensive, a couple bucks a week.
Yeah.
You could do that. But I really am optimistic. The one other thing I think about, and this goes back to the past, and some of you will remember when we had the Rocky Mountain News and the Denver Post, and there was a lot of sensationalism and in the news media and battles back and forth in newspaper. We don't see that anymore. It's kind of evolved in a way that you don't publish headlines because they're going to cause somebody to put a quarter in the box and buy the newspaper anymore. What I see happening, and I think we've tried to do that, is I see newspapers, journalists doing a better job maybe of building consensus in a community. You know, the national politics seem to have split it apart, but on the local level, I think I see more consensus. You know, NIWAT, we operate mostly with nonprofit organizations, and there's a bunch of them, and they all do different things, but they all work pretty well together. That didn't always happen, But over time, it's kind of like now you respect what people do and you understand what they do. And I think having a local newspaper has actually helped that. There are times when we could write about different things that somebody says or does. I remember getting a nasty email about somebody taking down a sign along the road. We have what we call Burma Shave signs when there's an event. And there was an Iowa high school graduation. And that day, somebody came along and took down the graduation. Congratulations, seniors. It was a guy who had a senior, but he did it after the thing. But the guy that was upset didn't know that, and it just, we didn't write about that. We could have, because it was local organizations, but it all resolved itself. Like, oh, okay, that's what happened. Yeah, you really did wait, and yeah, you weren't taking our space. And so there are those opportunities, I think, for journalists to create controversy or to build consensus. And I think it's working more on the side of building consensus.
Well, I'll say if you five are optimistic, I'm optimistic. And I'm guessing that the audience, if they're not optimistic, they're appreciative of your time this afternoon. So why don't you help me thank them. generally, I'm the one that whistles, so I appreciate that. Since we're wrapping up the backstory, I want to say the next episode of the backstory actually is tomorrow night in the beautiful downtown Longmont, in the Longmont Public Media Studio. We're going to feature Annie in Millie's Place, which is a new nonprofit in town that does homeless outreach and really focuses on our homeless population with animals and the care and treatment of those animals. So if anybody's interested, join us at 6 o'clock in the Longmont Public Media Studios tomorrow evening. We have live audience. So if you want to avoid handing out candy, come join us. If you want to hand out candy, you'll be out by 7 o'clock. You can still get home and do that. So Longmont, that's your backstory on news, journalism, and accountability. Thanks for joining us. See you soon.